the cameras are up by these two pillars. And what that means is that if you... Well, it means if the camera's looking at you, don't pick your nose. But what that means is that if you have a question or you're going to speak from the floor, if you're sitting near the pillar, and when you stand up, you need to move away slightly. Otherwise, they're going to lose you. They won't be able to see you. And I'm sure that the people remotely participating will be very upset. So... we have a fairly busy day today, but we do have the CC dinner tonight, so that's good. Gabby has the tickets, except for my secret supply. The first item of substance on today's agenda is the ICANN's CCTLD expenses overview, and Byron is going to... lead that session with Kevin from ICANN. If you have a question, can I please ask you, when you stand up, A, use a microphone, B, say your name, and C, say where you're from. That way, we all know who you are. Okay? Excellent. Byron.
Are these on?
Yes. Okay.
All right, thank you very much, Chris, and thanks everybody for coming out at 9 a.m. on time. This is going to be, I think, our first effort at really taking a look at ICANN's attempt to break the expenses down in a new and meaningful way for all the communities and ours in particular. So Kevin is going to run through a presentation that speaks to the document that was provided to the community a couple of weeks ago, and looks at the expense breakdown in a number of different ways, by community, by functional areas, by natural expense areas. And I think the thing that I wanted to start with is just to say I think this is very positive work, and that it's really the beginning of a process. This is the first cut at a new level of detail for expenses and the first part of a dialogue for the community. Really what Kevin is going to focus on today is helping to provide an understanding of how the numbers work, how the work was done, what Kevin's finance team has done in order to provide these numbers and give confidence in the numbers. I mean, for those of you who've gone through the document, you'll notice that there are certainly reference to estimates and allocations and other accounting terms. And Kevin, in part, is here to make sure that we understand that, so we can ask any questions about that, but also really to provide confidence that in this first step or stage, that you can trust the numbers. The numbers are real, and that in the further dialogue, you can have confidence that the numbers are, in fact, a good representation of the truth. One other thing I'd like to say is there's certainly a material component regarding IDNs. There will be a discussion tomorrow or a session tomorrow specific to the IDNs and the money allocations associated with the IDNs. So since there's an entire session on that alone tomorrow, I would ask that for the most part, if we could keep IDN-related questions or budgeting questions to tomorrow's session. If there's anything high level, sure, we can talk about it, but remember, there is an entire session tomorrow, so let's try to just park the IDN questions for tomorrow's session. How are we doing with the presentation? A couple more seconds.
Could everybody look at it on the screen until he does that? Can you email it to them? Or Gabby, could you email it to them?
It's not going to work for those who don't have emails,
computers and email right now. Give us a moment. We'll almost be there. I know this is much anticipated. Everybody likes to look at facts and figures and numbers and budgeting, and I know that the community has been waiting for this for a while. As you may know, I'm relatively new to the community, and I know there are many of you who have probably forgotten more meetings than I've been to, but I think this is something that's been very much anticipated. I've certainly taken a good look at them, and coming from something of a numbers background, I think, you know, I can always say it's a good strong first effort, and bear in mind that that really is what it is. This is the first effort and a first step towards greater detail and information the community has been asking for quite some time. Okay.
Great. Thank you, everybody. And as always, at everything at ICANN is in perfect timing. So the presentation is now up on the screen. You can see it up there. Thank you, Byron. Thank you, Chris. Many of you know my name is Kevin Wilson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for ICANN. And I'm looking forward to sharing an area that the finance team and others in the organization have been preparing, largely in response to the requests at the Mexico City meeting. It evolved, the name evolved, but it's affectionately called the EAG reporting, another acronym for us to memorize, until we come up with a better name. It's called the Expense Area Group Reporting. Just real briefly on the history, traditionally ICANN has reported the way accountants think in its natural accounting, and in the spirit of accountability and transparency, we've provided more and more. Is there a problem? Nope. Go ahead. Okay. We've provided more and more financial reporting and other reporting on the website and otherwise. And so we've done that. In response to the community, we provided more analysis and more further different views of ICANN's financials. And that evolved to what's called the functional reporting, which was it's now posted on the website. And then I think the general comment is that functional reporting is good, but we want something more, and that's what the EAG reporting is that we've been working on and posting now for public comment. So graphically, for those who like pie charts, you can see here on the left is the traditional accounting view with the way we traditionally view our accounts. On the right, and don't worry about reading all those small slices. We'll have blow-ups of each of the relevant chart slices in a second. But on the right, you can see now we have more functional area view, and that's now reporting on the dashboard in real time. So this is the expense area group view, which is grouped in areas that we believe is in more interest along the lines of what the community has asked for. And that's also open, as I mentioned earlier, is open for public comment now. So in this presentation, I think I'm going to try to answer these four questions. Why, which is just a real brief historical background how we got to this point. What, identify what the categories of interest that we're trying to dig down and we believe that the community is asking for. And then how, explain the cost accounting methodology. As Byron said, our aim is to build a level of trust that you can trust, the community can trust the numbers as they're reported, and then just identify what the next steps are through this. So this table is the chart, which is what our traditional accounting and traditional budget. So you can see there personnel, travel, meetings, professional services, administration, and over there is the $54.3 million budget, which we're expecting and hoping that the board will consider and vote for on Friday, that has gone through lots of community feedback. And that's the traditional accounts view. If you translate it into sort of a simple, and forgive me if this is oversimplifying it, but a household budget, what would that mean? This might be things that you would spend on, so housing, your mortgage, your clothing costs, your any expenses, telephone, utilities. So that's the traditional accounting method. And then, as I mentioned, we rolled out this year the functional reporting, which really shows the purposes of the behind the spending. So it's grouped in areas that are more project oriented, new GTLDs, IDNs, contractual compliance. Those are the categories that we're looking at, and if you back to the simple household budget example, this might be things like entertainment. So you might want to know how much in your budget, household budget, you're spending on entertainment, but it would cut across some categories like transportation or food. And then it might have some direct costs like the hotel that you spent on your trip. Maybe not this wouldn't count as entertainment, but if you went to on a vacation, a hotel cost. Education costs would be also cut across categories such as transportation, books, and direct tuition. So the monthly functional reporting is now on the dashboard, and the budget that's about to be posted also shows our budget in these functional categories. And then the plans are in fiscal year 10 to show a budget and the actuals in real time each month for variance. So this is the functional reporting that's reported on the dashboard. This is the May functional report that comes in. You can see the winner is the new GTLD effort. Obviously, we spend considerable numbers on there. IDN's in there, IANA security, contractual compliance, et cetera, meetings. So now we talk about the expense area group reporting. And once again, this is a result of the community feedback received on the functional reporting was positive, but they want the community groups and members requested that we have more reporting, more details, and also in a different way, and broken down into different slices. So for example, here's a typical question. How much is spent for the GTLDs and GNSO? Or how much is spent for the CCTLDs and CCNSO, or ALAC, or pick your community group? So we developed the EAG reporting to align for that for each interest group. And this is sort of along the lines of, if you go back to the simple household budget, this would be by, say, dependent. So for your child, how much of the rent, how much of the across transportation, food, all the things that you're buying per child or per family member. In order to count for 100% of ICANN, in order to keep the integrity and the trust in the numbers, we needed to select a model that was mutually exclusive but complete, so that it had all the entire ICANN budget was in there, not just the ones, not just pieces, and also not double count. Make sure that it was 100%. That was very important. So as a model to follow, we use the organization structure that's on the ICANN website, and use that for our categories. So these are the categories you can see there from the third one down there, country code support and support for CCNSO activities. You can walk down the list there of each of the different categories. And you can see over here on the right, we had to fill in these numbers so that it totaled the $54 million 100% budget number. We wanted to make sure that we had everything accounted for and didn't double count at all. That was very important. The key principles in developing, as I mentioned, that the budget is the view of the budget, in this case the EAG view, is 100% of the budget. That was very important. Another important point that sometimes lost when you look at the specific charts is that each slice is not separable from the rest. It's just like the internet as a one interoperable whole. The ICANN budget is also an interoperable whole. You can't, take two-thirds of a BART, you have to understand there's a cross-functional and interdisciplinary, interdependent aspect of the budget. That being said, we also realize it's important to show the slices in a view that's appropriate. The other point is that there's no one view that's better or worse. These are just different views to try to capture and provide a perspective on the ICANN budget. And then also important, and we'll get into this a little bit more detail, is that the direct costs for is how the cost estimating was done. This won't surprise the accountants out there, but those who might not be so familiar with accounting, there are certain costs which are direct costs that are specifically identifiable to a specific area. An invoice for a consultant working on a specific area would be an example of that. Other costs are I call it indirect costs. So say, for example, Bart or Gabby, who might be heavily involved in the CCNSO or CC activities, but maybe not 100%. They might be allocated some portion of their time for other groups as well. might be a bad example for Gabby, because I think you actually are mostly dedicated to CC. So she would be allocated 100%. Bart has a few other responsibilities, so he might be mostly allocated, not completely. So that's important to understand. Or say like the meeting space. So there's a certain amount of the meeting costs. The core meeting cost for this meeting, for example, is about $1 million. So if you take a certain percentage of all the meeting costs and allocate it to each of the groups, that's important to do. That someone has to spend that, someone has to allocate that, so we show that in that specific way. And then finally, there's some costs that it's just impractical to allocate. So rent in our facilities or insurance or finance time, it's very difficult to allocate the accounts payable time. Personnel or the payroll people or human resources, those sorts of things. So we have an overhead rate that's applied evenly across all. So that's the general methodology. Now, these are excerpts from the paper, and I don't want to go into detail on each of the different 11 area groups, but I wanted to focus in on one that will be of some interest. So I have slides for all 11, but I'm going to focus in just for a second on three, which is CC support and CCNSO as an example, to give you an idea of some of the costs that our work to date has brought us to share on how these costs are captured. So, for example, for the for this group, the IANA function services for the country code registries, processing of redelegations, the capacity building courses for the CCTLD community, policy support work for the CCNSO, secretariat support for CCNSO, constituency travel resources. Hopefully everyone knows that their CCNSO has provided travel support costs. So those would be allocated to this group. And then, as I mentioned before, there's an allocation of overhead costs such as rent and human resources accounting that gets allocated across all the categories. In addition, there's this budget year, there's financially significant projects which are in the budget, which are included in this. And those include the completion of the IDN CCTLD fast track plan, implementation plan, some IDN technical tests, IDN protocol, the completion of the IDN protocol, and our costs associated with that, and then the draft and execute the operational readiness to accommodate the delegation throughout, but particularly in the IN area of the new CCIDN. Actually, that's the old term. Sorry about that. The IDN CCTLDs. So we can talk about that more in a second, but I'm going to walk through quickly the different categories: NOMCOM support, root server ops and RSAC, security activities, at-large support and ALAC, TLGI ETF support, staff work and board support, government relations and GAC support, ombudsman. And once again, we got those categories from the ICANN organizational structure chart on the website. Now, some of you might be wondering how we would specifically do that. So here, I'm showing on a slide here to show the how the costs would be, for example, staff people might be allocated. So here's an executive. And if you look down here, you can see my mouse is there. So 5% of their time is spent for the NRO ASO support. I'm going to focus on this group, the country code number 3, country code support and support for CCNSO. So this particular executive, we allocated 10%, 20%. A policy staff person was at 75% associated with that. And you can see for each of these individuals, as well as the whole ICANN staff and other costs as well, are allocated 100% across those. And assuming this EAG reporting gets established and is comfortable, we'll establish procedures on how those costs are captured each week, each month, in real time. Right now, these are allocations based on estimates of those people's time and then applying them to the budget that we did. So this last slide results in the final number, which shows that once again, the overall ICANN budget of $54.4 million and allocated amongst all the different categories to come up with the different numbers, with the generic TLD activities and GNSS support at 18.7 and country code support and CCNSO activities at 9.19. So what's next? There is an online public forum available for comment. We haven't received a whole lot of comments with all the other activities. I think it's scheduled for closing maybe early next week. We're, you know, that's not a hard deadline. It's more important to get feedback. So if we sense that there's people about to be provide comments or want to add direction or suggestions for this or validation of this, then we will certainly I'll make an effort to extend that deadline. And then as we have a few meetings here in Sydney, and then open it up for conference calls and invite, for example, Byron, your group, the working group, SOP working group. I think that would be a possible opportunity sometime in the summer to give a feedback if you want to take some of your vacation time possibly. And then after we synthesize those comments and get our sense of how we're doing on this, the suggested EAG reporting, then we'd either implement it or modify it and implement it and establish as part of ICANN's arsenal of demonstration of transparency and accountability. Okay? Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Thank you very much, Kevin. I think, as everyone can probably see, there's been a fair amount of work done by the finance team to get the reporting to this level from where it has been in the past. So thank you very much. I think it's a great start, a good step forward. Hopefully today that this has provided some good information for you, and now we're going to open it up to questions. Just a reminder, we're going to try to park the IDN discussion until tomorrow's session specifically on that. And I think that depending on your interest, some people find the numbers very interesting. I know it's hard to believe, Kevin, maybe some people less so. But I think what it does do is really sharpen and highlight areas of import, how the money is flowing, where it's flowing, both within as well as between the communities. And I think both are fair comment for this group. So maybe with that, we'll open the floor to people who want to ask questions of Kevin.
Go ahead.
Do we? Mike?
Is there a protocol on who chooses? Chris, do you choose?
No, you choose. Okay. I just get to run around with the microphone.
You're standing up?
This is bizarre.
You can't get there
trapped.
From here.
I'm trapped.
Thank you. I'm Hilde Thunem from the Norwegian Registry. And I just have a simple question. I'm afraid it touches a little bit on IDN, but not on the specifics. And that's just, I'm sitting here with the very interesting breakdown in CCTLDs and GTLDs for the entire budget. And I see that part of it is the normal costs, and part of it is what is called financially significant projects, such as complete the IDN CCTLD fast track. And then I look at the IDN CCTLD fast track paper, which says that the cost of this will be $3 million, that is the CCTLD share, and will be split across the applicants. So I just wonder, how does these $3 million relate to the $9 million in the other budget, saying that here the fast track is part of the $9 million? So should we then say that the operating costs according to this budget would be $6 million for the CCTLDs?
I'm heavily coached not to address the aspect of the fast track versus IDNs for Gs. Okay, so I just want to know. I won't answer you directly, but I'll answer a bit. And it's not because ICANN's not going to address that issue. It's just not right now, and not from the CFO. But I wanted to address one thing. Go ahead.
Perhaps my English isn't good enough to put across the point. What I'm really asking is not what is behind the numbers, but isn't the $3 million then also counted into the $9 million?
Okay, so the answer is the $3 million. It's hard not to dance into that area, because the $3 million is an allocation of the $6 million, which is associated with the IDN program, right? You're talking about
The IDN program says that the entire cost of IDNs is $6 million, and the share of the CCTLDs are $3 million. And since the $9 million in this paper is saying that part of it is the IANA function and the local part, and part of it is the IDN fast track.
Okay, so the short answer is the reason why it's not double counting is because the $6 million, or the if you take a portion of it, $3 million. Is multiple year. That's an IDN program, just the IDN. But that's not the purpose.
Can I jump in just for a second? Yeah. We did have a fairly robust discussion about this very question and asked about the double counting issue, which you've definitely highlighted a key issue, and you're targeting it on something very relevant. We did work through that, and I think the key thing that you're probably just about to allude to is it is a multi-year number. You're looking at the big number, which is a multi-year number, versus the budget, which is a single-year number. And approximately, just shy of $1,974,000, I think was the hard number, of the total that you're referring to is included in this single-year budget. So it is in there, but only the piece that's relevant to this year versus the total number you're referring to.
Okay, that at least answered the question of how the numbers are relating.
Yeah, it is in there, but not so that if you take the $3 million number, Hilda, and just say it's $1 million for this year, it's 900 and something, but call it $1 million.
Yeah.
$2 million is already spent in previous years, effectively, and the $1 million is what is spent in this coming year, and is included in the $9 million. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Hilda. Go ahead.
Kim, would you mind being the microphone fairy? Since you asked.
Thank you, Kim. Ladies and gentlemen, Kim Davies, microphone fairy. Thank you.
many talents.
Who did we have? Was there someone before?
Roloff.
I think Roloff was next.
Roloff Meyer from .nl. Hilda stole my question, so maybe I can just translate the answer into a recommendation. I think it would be useful if those types of costs that will be recovered separately, like new GTLDs and IDNs and IDN CCTLDs, are also reported separately in these overviews. That would be a recommendation, then I have a question.
So Rolf, can I just add a clarification there? So what you would be looking for is actually what we would call the functional reporting within the CC slice of the budget.
It can also be the EAG reporting, but I'm assuming, and I know that's dangerous, but I'm assuming that I can want to do something with the data that has ordered in this particular way. So I'm also assuming that there will be a day where we as a community will hear, these are the costs for the CCTLDs, and we're now going to talk about how much you contribute and how you will cover the rest. I think then it's fair that the part that is already recovered in a different way is taken out of that amount. If it's 1 million or three, if it's recovered separately, directly by a certain group, then take it out of the reporting, because it's not part of the discussion that you're going to have with this group. That's my point. More general, I'm wondering, I have two questions. What are the conclusions that ICANN has drawn so far from this outcome, if any? And what are your plans? No, I don't mean the next steps for the reporting, but what are the ideas that ICANN has to do with this data? Any plans on using it? For instance, to have a discussion like I was just referring to.
Yeah, I think I'm safe to say my financial goal is to have accountability and transparency to the point where that discussion and the discussion we're actually mostly having today is off the table, and the only discussions are about prioritization of spending. So there's no question about whether we're spending the money efficiently and whether how we're spending it. It'll be very clear on dashboards or however it's communicated. So that's an important goal for finance. And this is an important step for that. So to answer your question, the goal of the reporting is to give the information to those who use the information to make decisions. And in ICANN's case, it's community, board, staff, and in concert to provide that information. So that's my. You're not nodding your head, so I'm not sure I'm answering directly. But the overall
can
goal.
Can I just fill in a gap there? Well, the answer to your question is, of course, this is the beginning of the big discussion about the money, and that's actually where it came from, because it was in an IDN context at the time. But what we said was, look, we can't. It's the same old question we've been asking forever. So, you know, Doug and Kevin were understood that almost immediately, and went away and did this. So now we have to pay the price of the fact that they've actually done it. Which is to have the discussion about paying. Now, obviously, so I think in the context of that is going to be happening at some point in the not-too-distant future, that should inform the sort of questions that you would want to be asking, not necessarily today, but going forwards, about the numbers. Do you want more detail? Do you want the pie charts to be a different colour? What do you want in order that when it comes to, how are we going to slice up this $9 million or whatever it is? So first of all, do we agree the $9 million? And secondly, how are we going to slice it up? What is the information that you need to start talking about that properly? Does that make sense? Okay.
I think next was Leslie and then Mathieu.
Where's Kim?
Kim. Goodness sake, man. Pay attention.
Leslie, yes.
Do we have ICANN microphone monitor in our costs? okay. Leslie Cowley from nominate.uk. Kevin, as you know, we're very appreciative of all of the work that's gone into this analysis. It's information that we've been asking for many, many years, and actually to see that produced now is great. It's an awful lot of information, and I think it will take some time for us to develop an understanding of the figures and what they mean for our community. So we may need a little time in return, probably not 4 years, but we will need some time to consider the information more fully. So you mentioned earlier the deadline for comments. Yes, I'd like to encourage a extension of that deadline, because that, particularly given the timing with this meeting, makes it quite difficult to make comments on the information. I would also support Rolf's suggestion that we look a bit more into the CCNSO costs by category. And as you know, I've already made that suggestion to you directly. That would be helpful in developing
community
understanding.
Can you just explain what you mean? Explain what you mean by that, Leslie?
I'm talking about an analysis of the CCNSO costs by functional category.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I know you mentioned it, and I guess the first thing, thank you very much. It is a lot of work behind the scenes to get to this point. Probably the biggest challenge for me and our team is to communicate it in a simple way without having everyone becoming a PhD in cost accounting at ICANN. So I appreciate that. Second, on the extension of the deadline, we were talking about weeks, months. Maybe that's an offline comment, but I'd like to get an idea of whether I formalize it or update it and then do it a second round. But I think this will be a common language. I'm hoping this will be a common language that will be used for a while. And as the Board Finance Committee has heavily coached me, at some point it's good just to stick your stake in the sand so everybody has a common language for several periods and not change the language each period. And then the specific thing about the basically doing a functional analysis inside the EAG, that's essentially what we're asking. So there's 15 functional categories in the operating plan, and then there's 11 EAG categories. So we have that. We have the spreadsheets to do that, and I'm wondering what the method of communication. So in your feedback, it'd be really helpful. Do you want to have 15 times 11, I can't do the math in my head, but someone out there I'm sure can. It's a lot of little buckets, and each one of those have personnel, travel, administration meetings. So just factor that in. I'm tempted to put the whole general ledger on the website, but I don't think that's what's being asked for.
I don't think we're asking for that. We're just looking for some more analysis of the CCNSO costs, particularly because that will help inform our own decision-making and discussions about contributions.
Right. Okay.
But
thank you.
We can take that offline.
Right. Thank you.
Over to Matthew. So maybe what we're looking for is the ability to, I think what I'm hearing there is prioritization decisions, because at some point, once we get past the understanding the numbers, believing in the numbers, having confidence in the numbers, then we'll want to say, here are the 11 categories within the CCNSO community that are relevant: policy, staff, training. Do we want more policy, less training, more policy, that will be able to give the community the ability and intel to then start making prioritization decisions? Because right now we just see it as a big slice for us, but how can we affect that slice?
Right.
And we won't be able to do that until we have that knowledge.
Great, that's really helpful. Just to respond, I want to arc back to the comment that Roloff made, that the goal for the reporting is, number one, you called it confidence or trust building. It's to ensure that anyone looking at our financials can feel comfortable that we're spending the money efficiently. I'm confident because I see all the invoices that we're spending the money efficiently. We need to be able to have mechanisms in the reporting as such that those comments are taken care of. And then the second is exactly what you're talking about, to make sure that our prioritization of spending is clear. And we need to provide the information and ways to have management action items capable of being made from the information. Thank you.
Mathieu?
Yes. Mathieu Veil, I'm the CEO of AFNIC.fr Registry. Well, first of all, just like Leslie said, really there's a lot of praise to be addressed to you, Kevin, and your team for providing such figures, which were very expected, and we've been asking for them at several points, and I think it's extremely valuable for our community and for the ICANN community to finally have the groundworks for a common understanding of this issue, which has sometimes been contentious between communities, between supporting organizations, for instance.
Right.
And it's extremely important that, as you highlight, we build trust and confidence around these figures. In this line of thinking, I was quite surprised, and I found some results of the exercise a little counterintuitive. So one of the aspects I'd like to go a little deeper on is the indirect costs that you mentioned, for instance, the meeting costs.
Right.
And I think it would be useful if there was some further information about how those costs are located to which expense area group. For instance, the meeting costs, are they allocated to the CCNSO depending on the number of attendees or depending on whatever factor you're using?
Right.
And I believe it would be very helpful if further information was provided on this to make sure that there is also a common understanding. I know by experience that this is the key aspect of expense area group, and this is where most of the discussion usually happens when you're presenting your accounts to your board. And so I'd really appreciate even further if we could have information about this type of allocation methods.
Okay, good. That's part of it. On our next, we call it trimester, the trimester before the SOL meeting, I have a goal and deliverable to have a cost accounting methodology paper, and I imagine you would be an active reader of that, and we'll address that specifically. And I can answer the question about how much meeting cost was allocated, or if you want me to right now. But
sure.
Yeah, so just as a rough idea, for many of you know, $2 million is sort of the magic number for a meeting that the board board approves for each meeting. And it varies meeting by meeting, of course, depending on location and venue and what we negotiate. And that roughly translates, and this is just, don't hold me to this, and don't tell our auditors that I'm saying this, but this gives you an idea. It's about $1 million in core meeting costs, so the space, the connectivity, the things that aren't specifically identifiable to a traveler, and about $1 million for travel support for board, staff, those in the community that are supported, vendors, and that sort of thing. So the $1 million of travel support, we allocate it to wherever it goes. So for example, Bart's travel time would be allocated here. My travel time, you would only get an overhead smear. But the core meeting costs, the number that pops in my head is 10% for the CCNSO and each of the SOs and ACs. I think ALAC, for example, had a little bit more because they have a little bit more interpretation costs that are factored in there, but not a whole lot more. But I think that's a good idea that we could spell that out. I'm just always nervous about the communication. I don't want to put people to sleep and miss the main point. But I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
And I think, Matthew, you raise a very good point, because it's some of those fundamental assumptions that are going to give us as a community confidence in the numbers. Because while accounting is supposed to be precise, there are many estimates and allocations that come into play, and we need to have confidence that they're fair and reasonable. And I think you've given us a pretty good example there of the types of things that are going to get allocated. So if we can, for those who are interested, I think it is important that we get the detail. And if nothing else, that those that are interested can then disperse the information throughout the community.
Right. Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? Or have we done enough accountancy for the morning?
Is everybody asleep already?
I'd like to just say one thing, and that's basically thank you. This community has, for a very long time, asked for this sort of thing, and it's great. Not only is it great to get the document and et cetera, but it's great that the questions that are being asked are getting answered, and it's great that clearly there is a huge amount of stuff that's gone on behind this. It's not that we would suggest that such a thing would happen as plucking things out of the air, but it's marvellous. Now, we've got a ways to go, but this is a magnificent first step to getting clear with the CCTLDs about funding and costs. So thank you very much for that from me.
Thank you, Chris. And I also wanted to thank you, Chris, and I'm sure many of you know how hard your working group, the SOP working group, does, and specifically for the ICANN finance team. So we've officially adopted or unofficially adopted them as an extension of our finance team to help us sort through these issues, so that when we do present, that we're further along the path. So thank you, Byron and Leslie and the whole team.
Thank you very much. And everything being perspective, you know, I asked for it in Mexico and I got it here, so I thought it was incredibly quick how that happened. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, our next session is with Toomsey, with Paul Toomey and Peter, and it's at 10 o'clock, so we've got sort of amuse yourselves for 5 minutes break, but please don't go too far away, because we'll start on time. Well, assuming they get here, we will.
technical issue? Can we have a technical issue?
Morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Hey, they're talking about changing just the power around on the 110, just changing its feed into the 110, so the step-down transformer. That means turning your rack off at some stage. You guys are streaming at the moment now. I'm not going
to
do it until...
You don't have to be streaming now. The problem is I don't know exactly how long it takes those machines to come back up.
Okay, let's not touch anything.
Yeah, until lunch?
Let's leave it until we know exactly what we can
do. We can do it during lunch. When I say I don't know how long it'll take, I mean it could take 4 minutes, it could take 15 minutes. It's not gonna take more than that.
Cool.
It's just
that
a matter
it.
Of
yeah. Do it at lunch. Nothing now. So if we can just solve Chris's little issue here, then we're good to get back on. So leave the 110 plugged in where it's. What's gone?
Who knows?
The buzz is gone.
Okay.
Ladies, no mic. Can I have it? May I have a mic, please?
This is on, but very soft.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you could please take your seats. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Dr. Toomey is currently taking what I believe is euphemistically referred to in America as a comfort break. He'll be here in a second. And Peter's disappeared, so we don't know where he is. I must remember that all this stuff goes up there. It's quite scary, really. Yeah. So we'll get started in a second, but I... So quickly, I'm a bit shocked, actually. But you were already sitting, buddy. Others were not. I don't sing, thanks, Greg. Not at this time of the morning. Gabby, when do you want to hand out the tickets? Oh, you're doing it now. Okay. And what? If you have registered to come to the CC dinner tonight, please see Gabby and tell her who you are. And I think that is it 6:30? Okay. So there are buses coming to take us there at 6:30. It's not actually a long way, but we thought it would probably be easier if we put everybody on some buses and took us down there. So that's happening. Paul, welcome. Come on in. So if you could make sure that you have your invitation, because that's the only way you're going to be able to get in. I believe that we're ready to almost ready to start. So this, ladies and gentlemen, our next session is the our traditional ICANN update from Paul and the invisible Peter Dengates Rush. Paul, welcome, and over to you.
Thanks, Chris, and. Hi, everybody. Do you like the facilities in the hotel? Does it work? It seems to work, huh? Well, he's saying yes, but he's sponsoring it, so... It seems to be going well, and today's blue sky. So please, anybody who has not yet, find a way of escaping from the CCNSO meeting, take a taxi for 15 minutes, go down to the Opera House, and at least just see the harbour, the Opera House and the bridge with the blue sky and the blue harbour. It's gorgeous. Do it at least once, because it'll probably rain again by the end of the week. Welcome. I'm very pleased to be here. I understand all the issues have been dealt with, and I can... Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about?
No.
You've had a session working through this morning, I understand, on all the... With Kevin and others on the finances. So,
yeah, and I was just saying before to someone I can't remember Jean-Jacques. Thank you. That I think it's a fantastic effort and a great start to the discussions that we're going to need to have over time, in respect to cost allocations and money, etc. But it's fantastic to be able to. A, have it, and B, be able to ask questions about it and get answers. So that they've done a brilliant job and deserve to be congratulated for that.
Just a small aside, I was just doing some adding up of things, obviously, for coming to the end of my tenure.
Your expenses, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Since I've been president, we've done 37 redelegations or delegations of country codes. Many of those have been very complicated and complex and have required a lot of attention. So I just thought I'd share that additional fact because it helps contribute to, I think, that whole discussion. The IDN-CCTLD discussions, there's still some ongoing work, and I very much appreciate your work, Chris, in helping to bring this forward. There is a... The DOR is out there, I think, now. You should be aware that the board is receiving a report from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, which is quite strongly stating there's a risk in TLDs generally of wild card implementation, and that wildcard implementation is a security and stability risk to the DNS. We have a number of instances already where that is being utilized in some country codes, and we have a lot of staff and other community pressure brought to bear in those particular instances, but for particular circumstances they've not been reversed, has even reinforced the concern that as we look to expand the TEAL, the zone file significantly, this is something that the Security and Stability Committee is very concerned about, that they're very concerned that there needs to be constraints of one form or another to ensure that that sort of behaviour does not blossom, which I think you'll see is the board will also take quite seriously, and the board will continue to have this emphasis upon the need for some form of agreement, specifically on technical, which we've said fairly consistently, on technical coordination and discussion, because not only do we have known risks like SiteFinder, apologies to VeriSign. SiteFinder does not necessarily mean totally wildcards, but not only have we got the risk of wildcards, but we also potentially have risks of things we don't know yet, and we're going to need to have that technical dialogue.
Can I just specifically on the wildcard thing for a second? Because the wildcard thing's got nothing specifically to do with IDNs, it's just to do with expanding the route and generally.
It's general, yeah.
So can I,
although
it's less of a risk.
Yes, go on.
Okay. So let's assume for the sake of discussion that a report comes out from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee that says, this is bad, and this is why it's bad.
Mm.
Now, what you want to achieve is for it not to happen. So my question is, how can we find a way of bringing the Security and Stability Advisory Report to the CCNSO, and within the CCNSO have an agreement, I mean, I'm using the term agreement loosely, go through a process where we agree that with the Security and Stability Advisory Report, and do something. Now, what that something is, I'm not entirely sure, because you're not going to run a policy development process on wildcards, but I think we could certainly come up with some mechanism for dealing with the issue of wildcards in the CC community that it would at least have the effect of putting, I'm assuming that the general consensus would be that they would agree with the report, right? And then would at least have the effect of putting peer pressure on those that are outside of that. Do you see what I'm...
I do. And I'm not saying that's not a bad approach. I'm going to be careful, because there's a couple of specifics where, frankly, I don't want to put anybody's livelihood or future at risk. But can I just make the point that, in some examples I'm already aware of, if somebody domestically needs to stand up for the right thing in the face of domestic pressure to do, quote, the wrong thing, external peer group pressure is not sufficient.
So what is?
Often it's useful to say, I'd love to, but here's this piece of paper which says I can't. And I am drawing from two or three actual circumstances, and I'm not going to talk about the details of them. But
no, I understand that. But that inexorably leads to the cul-de-sac discussion.
I realise,
and doesn't help with the existing CCTLD at all. What I was trying to do was see if there's a mechanism that we can use that actually does help with the existing CCTLDs. And so you're not saying it doesn't work, you're just saying it may not be enough, is that?
Yeah, I'm not saying what you suggested is not a good thing to do.
Right.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just pointing out that that in some circumstances it's not sufficient. We are again in one of those topics where deliberate, even though I looked at that question before about redelegations. If there's been 37 redelegations in the last 6 years, I suspect a minority of those 36 are sitting in this room.
Yeah.
And so it is again a question of the risk that the CC and SO community, while representing well over 90% of registrants, does not represent 90% of CCTLD operators. Yeah. So we're now dealing with how do we we don't have that luxury. We have to deal with everybody, and we have to ensure the system has integrity for everyone. And so that's where we're. Yeah.
Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologies for lateness.
So I was going to suggest that one of the things I was going to bring up was the IDN thing and say we did seem to be making some progress in respect to the document or the things that needed to be abided by, and the GAC, I think, I'm fairly sure that the GAC will endorse the staff in the implementation plan suggestion about the tick box concept, which we haven't discussed yet. We'll do that tomorrow. So you may find that by the end of this week you have you have a sort of building on what happened in Mexico. You actually have both the GAC and the CCs coming back to you saying, yes, this suggestion actually works for us. And that was so the things you're talking about are kind of sort of pull that off course again, because if you're talking about signing stuff and so on, this is really my point.
No, I understand that, and I'm not saying let's not be creative. Okay, I'm not saying let's not be creative. I am indicating that there are some expectations that some on the board, who are probably not as far down the discussions you and the GAC have had to understand it. There is definitely a sense that there needs to be universal coverage on this issue. That's the key point, and I think we just need to keep discussing how we achieve that. While we're also talking about IDN CCTLDs and such matters, Chris has reminded me that I think it's been a significant step forward this week that we've seen the People's Republic of China return to the Governmental Advisory Committee and participate actively. That has not resulted in any change of anybody else participating. And we've also seen participation in the GAC as a guest of the chair by the Russian Federation. In particular, at this meeting, the deputy minister of the Ministry for Communications has been in attendance. So I think both of those, for those who remember, you go back through the WSIS days, etc., I think both of those are a very important signal. And I think also, in particular, the return of the PRC representation will probably also result in further support for Chinese internet community participants to participate throughout ICANN. Obviously, CNNIC is as well as TWNIC and HKNIC and Macau, etc., are all participants here. But I think we're going to see a greater participation. I think that all of that is good when it comes to working through IDN issues.
Do you want to address it in
Sure. Do you want to say any words correctly? So the conversation up here is, do you want to talk about X? And then I say to the chairman, he says, no, you're doing a good job. I'm wondering if there's any questions on the topics we've done first, and then before I go to the joint project.
Does anyone want to ask anything about what we've talked about so far? So IDNs and contracts and money and... Yes, Rolf. Gabby, can you do the micro? Thank you. Rolf.
Rolf Meyer, .nl. Paul, I'm wondering, do you think that the use of wildcards is presently prevented by the existing accountability framework? So the exchange of letters or contracts signed between ICANN and CCTLD so far?
I don't think it is explicitly prohibited, but it does partly depend upon your interpretation of the RFCs, and the ESSEC report on the ESSEC report after the SiteFinder incident argued that wildcards were contrary to the RFC proposal, and there was some debate about that. The accountability framework talks about it being adhering to RFCs and relevant technical standards. The accountability framework certainly gives an opportunity for dialogue, so that part of the procedure is quite clear. But I don't think the wording of the present accountability frameworks explicitly calls out wildcards in the way that potentially the ESSEC would like to see.
So, Chris, then I think it's a good suggestion to treat that.
I think we can be proactive on that front anyway, because I had a meeting with Steve Crocker yesterday. We talked about improving the liaison between the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and the CCNSO, and I think we can take that report once it's been published, irrespective of the board, take that report and actually start to work ourselves on how do we deal with this. Because quite clearly, it's clear to me anyway, that it is a global policy issue. You know, how would you feel if some of your traffic was being lost because of this? I think is the easiest question to ask, and therefore it clearly crosses boundaries and territorial boundaries. So it's important. Jay, did you?
Yeah, Jay Daly. Do I detect some slight difference between you and ESSAC here, where ESSAC would like to look wider than wildcards at synthesis and redirection generally, and that they think there's a value in doing that?
No, I don't think you should. I've used wildcards as a shorthand. Okay. So I think that the whole issue needs to be looked at, and that's why when Chris was saying that IDNs is a smaller problem, when you start to come down to this broader redirection risks, I'd actually argue that potentially IDNs are a more significant problem, just in the sense of how people could potentially play with the Unicode. There's a whole series of things about registering in a certain way so you appear in the Unicode in another way, yes, etc. So I'm not the technical expert on it, but I think this concern they have is a real one, and it would behove us to really take it seriously.
Yeah, and I agree. And I wasn't saying it was a smaller problem. I was saying that it compounds the problem. It makes it worse. Who did we have, Hilda?
Well, Hilda Tunum from the Norwegian Registry. I have first just one small question pertaining to wildcards, and that is, how many CCTLDs are we talking about that is a problem? 5, 2, 200?
I think it's just on double digits.
Eight. Kim thinks eight.
Eight, is it? Okay, well, okay. Kim says it's eight. It's something that size.
Just to have an idea of the size of the problem. Also, I think, and I'll have to go back and read the bylaws of ICANN a bit more clearly, which isn't my favorite task, but I think from the bylaws that making policy on name server interoperability for CCTLDs is explicitly within the CCNSO scope, as the CCNSO has the policy role, and so it would be something that if ICANN were to want to make a binding policy or binding recommendations, it would actually start here in this room, and not at, we would of course definitely cooperate with the RSEC, but I think it would have to start in this room according to your bylaws.
I think, Hilda, I think that's right. The key here is that it's the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. What they're doing is providing advice.
That's right.
What we would be doing is saying, ah, right, got that advice, now what are we going to do? So I think that's absolutely right. Anybody else?
Peter, a little comment. I'm so glad you raised the bylaws, Hilda. You know my fascination with the CCNSO bylaws. From memory, it's the CCNSO can make policies on anything that it likes. Point about interoperability issues is that starts to attract the bindingness and the ability to require people to comply.
That's
or
right.
Else explain why they got out. So it's more that interoperability issues are one of the things that we agreed that we would take seriously and would adhere to unless we had a good reason not to.
Yeah, I totally agree, but my point would also be that this is one of the things that is actually left to the CCNSO and not to the board to just make a policy and then put it on the CCNSO without consultation, unpopular as that viewpoint might be.
Anyone else?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi, this is Jen from CNIC. I'm still, actually, we're still concerned about the time issue about this IDM fast track. As current schedule, our final version of an implementation plan will be approved on Seoul meeting, yep. Right? I'm wondering what's next? What exactly the timeline next?
That was the question I just asked him.
Apparently, I'm now in charge of time.
Now, I think you're pointing out a natural consequence of the previous conversation, the previous point made. If this issue, which is an important issue, is to be addressed, we have and we're still to have the fast track in a time frame which includes potentially a Seoul. I think we'll have to take on notice, but discuss this week as to how those two things get addressed. And
well, yes,
I'm not expecting an answer from you today about this morning, but
well, clearly, as Hilda has quite rightly pointed out, if this is to be policy, and one imagines that eventually it would need to be policy, then there's a process that needs to be gone through to do that. There may be some sort of interim thing we could do, and we would obviously need to talk about that. But the key, it seems, it appears to me, if I'm understanding the message is this will need to be, you believe this will need to be dealt with in respect to delegations in the fast track.
Uh-huh.
And thanks, Vicar. And I suppose my question to you would be, well, if there's a process in place that's going to end up being satisfactory for dealing with it full stop, then what's the imperative that says it has to be dealt with in the interim in the fast track?
Well, I think we probably need to talk that, we talked it through and see what is the mechanism, and that's still, from my mind, a little bit hypothetical. I think there needs to be confidence, there will need to be great confidence that you know, there are many things in the internet that are interim and they're interim 20 years later.
Oh, sure.
And so I think, and particularly I think members of the ESSAC, if there was a group of people in ICANN who have that cynicism about the internet, it would be the members of the ESSAC. So I think we need to find some marriage. I mean, potentially it's I'm just daydreaming here. Potentially it's some voluntary statement by the applicants for the fast track that they will, or something, you know, we have to
yeah,
talk it through.
That's right. And I think, but the ESSAC's advice is about is not about how to do this. The ESSAC's advice is this should not be allowed to happen.
Right.
So everyone totally respects that. I imagine will totally respect that advice. But they're not saying, they're not making comment on methodologies or anything else, right?
Now, all I was saying is that the board will, I can report to you, I think, my read of the board is that the board will want to have confidence that this is in place. Whoever it's in place, but they will want to have confidence about that.
I can confirm that the discussion at the board, in fact, goes further and says it would be irresponsible not to. Right. And there's some quite strong feeling at that level about that.
Okay, so since we're... thank you for that. I would suggest that some people might think take a cynical view, which is that it's not true, but that it's a convenient mechanism by which those on the board who are insistent on contracts, for want of a better term, will use that hook to hang that argument on. So I think that perception might need to be dealt with.
I'm not going to say people won't make that conclusion, but I think my read of the board at the moment is that's their minds have not got there. Their minds are about this is an important issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
As Peter said it very well, it'd be irresponsible to do otherwise.
Okay. Any other questions before we move on to
Something else? Okay.
Well, one of the topics potentially we could talk about, which I think is important, is improving institutional confidence, and in particular issues around strengthening ICANN's accountabilities. We've had a President's Strategy Committee working on a series of issues, as you know, for quite a long time. So long, indeed, that I think many members of the community have got a bit bored with the whole topic. And we've had a number of recommendations out that they put forward. They put forward a series of recommendations in Mexico City. The board received those recommendations and asked staff to come forward with some proposals for how they potentially could be implemented. And to talk to some topics that have particularly been of interest, I think, to members of this community, there's obviously some discussion about what's the role of the GAC within ICANN. There's a discussion about, you know, does the GAC role get strengthened in some way or continue to be reviewed? And the recommendation to the start of the board is that it should engage directly with the GAC on that topic, and potentially with an open discussion about what is the role of the GAC to keep that dialogue going. There's a number of recommendations at a more, at a lesser level, about particular procedural issues which we've got board committees for, and they're going to the chairs of the board committees recommending that those board committees take these issues up. For instance, there's some things on public participation and other issues. There is a second proposal which we've discussed a lot in this room about potentially having an alternative legal entity or legal identity for ICANN for some particular administrative reasons. The report back to date has been that there has been some, and the recommendations were for the staff to start a dialogue with the officials of two jurisdictions, the Kingdom of Belgium and the Swiss Federation, and to report back to the community or to the board, and that the board would put anything before the community before any other step was taken. I can report to you that those discussions have been initiated, but because of particular constraints on the side of our interlocutors, we have nothing to report at this stage. The meetings, there will be further meetings later over the Northern Hemisphere summer. So that issue is still going along, but it's going along slowly. Partly, I think, also, frankly, because our exploration, particularly in the situation of both have this new laws of international non-profit organisation, they're not well. There's not a large precedent. They haven't used them very much yet, and so we're coming along as one of the first test cases for them to think about how they actually implement it. So that discussion is taking a little while. The two main proposals, which I did mention yesterday in my president's report, but I really wanted to reinforce, that are up, will potentially be up for discussion. Well, they're certainly up for discussion this week, and may be considered by the board for formal putting out for public consultation on this coming Friday, are for two mechanisms for reviewing board decisions. And I'll remind you that Peter's been on record many times that our objective is not to decrease ICANN's accountability, it is actually to increase ICANN's accountability, and it's increase ICANN's accountability to its community. And it's an important point, because there's a lot of discussion in the JPA, particularly inside the United States, that the existing link to the United States government is the accountability mechanism. And we're trying to say, you know, what we want is increased accountability to our whole community. So there's two proposals that are on the table. The first one is for the ability for the community to have a vote. If there was a decision made today, here in the ICANN meeting here in Sydney, that within 90 days or by the Seoul meeting, whichever is the longest, the community could organise to have a vote of its supporting organisations and advisory committees to ask the board to reconsider its decision. And that vote could, at the moment, the proposal is that it would be 2/3 of those committees and advisory committees voting for such a reconsideration, and that the standard of proof would be 2/3 of the votes of the members of the committees. And that can be discussed. put this in historical context and making it very simple. I think the origin about this thinking was Luxembourg and the .com/.net discussions. Okay, so let's put that firmly on the table. That sort of a thing, when suddenly something arrives on the table, takes everybody by surprise. Is there a mechanism they can say to the board, look, okay, you've thought about that, but we as a community really think you might have got that wrong. Please reconsider. So that's the first proposal. It's been discussed a lot in the PSC consultations. It generally seems to have received positive responses. The second one was that there'd be a similar mechanism for spilling the board as a whole. That got, even that had a lot of support, I'd say, 12 months ago, 18 months ago. But I think the closer we got to discussions, the more people said no, they were uncomfortable with that because it would be very destabilizing. Full destabilization of a full overthrow of the board and reconstitution of the board would be just the price wasn't worth the benefit. The other proposal which is on the table, and I really want to explore this a little bit with you because I think it's very important for this community, is the proposal on the table that we expand and augment our existing independent review panel process, which, contrary to many myths, is being used by one party now, and ICANN does not get to choose all of the arbitrators. It's done on its normal international arbitration mechanism. But having said that, we'd like to potentially look at expanding that and to establish essentially a standing international court. Now, I don't think we can really use the word court, although some of the members of the board would like us to. But a standing international, what we call at the moment, independent review tribunal. I think the weight of input at the moment is that the members should be named and be public so that people can actually see that tribunal. They can point to those people and say they are the international tribunal. And the expectation is that they would be drawn from multiple legal jurisdictions and technical background. There'd be a mix of both. And the expectation is that the quality of person considered would be a recently retired member of an appellate court, Supreme Court of the United States, High Court of House of Lords of the United Kingdom, the European Court of Justice. I don't know what the High Court is of Brazil, that sort of thing. That there'd be high-level people. And that group be empowered basically under three headings which have a lot of commonality in the laws of Europe, certainly Australia and I think also Japan, some parts of North America, under basically three headings, that you could go and say ICANN has made a decision that did not follow due process and was not fair, that didn't follow its rules for procedure. Or two, the ICANN board has made a decision which is beyond the scope of its mission. It's beyond what's sometimes referred in common law countries as ultra vires, beyond its powers. Or third, that the decision made was not rational, that it didn't pass some sense of reasonableness in terms of the evidence used for its decision making. Now, the proposed language is actually in a posting. It is an actual potential bylaws, sort of detailed bylaws language. But they're the three basic principles. And that the panel would then basically make a decision and would then probably formally under the way our bylaws and works would not say we're changing the decision, but like happens in many courts, I think is the case, would say, this sort of thing's applied often for ministerial discretion, when ministers make decisions. Often the courts say that they recommend the minister do X, so formally the minister exercises the power, but basically the court says you've got this wrong and you should do it the following way. We'd expect the same thing, that this tribunal would probably formally say that the board should reconsider its position, and in reconsidering its position, it should take the following things into account. That's probably the appropriate way under which our bylaws and constitution work. Can I stress what that potentially means? This is a mechanism where any affected party anywhere in the world can appeal a board decision of ICANN against a set of broadened legal principles in front of a panel which will be an international panel, and we expect to utilize an international dispute resolution body to convene that panel and to run the process. In other words, ICANN won't. So it's a very broadly defined attempt at accountability, not only to the community, but I think importantly, it's an international form of accountability. And we're trying to draw that as much as possible. So perhaps I'll.
If I can just add a couple of contextual comments around that. The theory about this is that we would have effectively four layers of review or appeal. We begin with an issue going to the Ombudsman. And at the moment, I think we're reasonably happy with the jurisdiction of the Ombudsman and his operating principles, but we will look at those as well. The next step, if you're unhappy with that, or if you come in at a different level above the Ombudsman jurisdiction, is that you would then ask for the board to reconsider. Now, we know that we need to look at the current reconsideration requirements. I've said publicly many times they are far too restrictive and they do not operate properly to satisfy me or most of the community that that's an effective reconsideration step. So we need to tidy that up. And I can just tell you, you know, that the grounds are so small and the conditions are so hard that there's never really been a successful reconsideration. So that's not working terribly well, so we need to fix that. The next thing is into these two parts that Paul is talking about the bylaws adding. And that is, if you've gone through one of those processes or you've gone to the Ombudsman and then you've gone for review of that decision, we get to the position where the community then can say, board, you need to reconsider this. And that's that's the suggestion about a two-thirds call for reconsideration. And then finally, if that reconsideration fails to give you satisfaction, you've then got this ultimate appellate authority going outside to these good and great and famous people using internationally acceptable rules of operation and principles against which the conduct would be judged to make a decision. So that's a far more organized set of accountability mechanisms than we currently have. And so this is part of a exercise in rendering these more coherent and hopefully more useful and more usable. But my final point would be, just remember what we have to do here. The whole concept of this is that we are self-regulating, that we are self-governing. So you must resist efforts by anyone to say, once you get to a certain point, you need to go outside of ICANN and ask someone else. And someone else is going to have the authority to make the decision. Intellectually, you must understand that damages, I think, fatally, the concept of self-regulation. But also politically, imagine what happens. Let's assume that we do create a body and we put the government of, let's take New Zealand, in charge. We say they're a good bunch of governments and perhaps the government of Australia might come and help them. See, let's trust some outside agency. Guess what's going to happen? Savvy political operators like you are going to realise that the decisions are really being made by those governments. And you will up sticks from ICANN and you will take it, you will form a CCTLD committee over where those governments are. And guess what the GTLD people will do? They'll say, there's not much point hanging around at ICANN, the decisions are actually being made over there. Sorry, we'll leave the GNSO and they'll go over there and they'll form a new organisation over there to deal with new GTLDs. And so will the at large. And so all you will do is pick up all the ICANN structures that we've built and transfer them to a place under government control. So while there may be some attractiveness in saying, yes, let's go and get somebody with a big stick and who's really, really strong, they'll make that ICANN to do. If you do that, then you are betraying the essential idea of an industry-led, self-regulating body. What we have to do is get accountability mechanisms where all the things that we do are responsible to the community of users and technical and all the other players.
Questions? Martin. Roloff. Martin first. Martin.
Hi, Martin Boyle, nominate.uk. Certainly I welcome the attention that is being paid to trying to find mechanisms for assuring some measure of accountability. But as the explanation went through, I think the message I got was that this was very heavily focused towards those people already actively engaged in ICANN. And in particular, it seemed to me to be very much based within the existing structures. And that led me to a sort of question about, really based on the comments and criticisms that have come in through the two NOIs on the JPA, the midterm, and the more recent one. How do you pick up where there is a community out there that is being heavily and adversely affected by our decisions and that hasn't got the sort of two-thirds majority vote right the way through the organisation, or where the decision that's been made is not does not fall outside following due process, is not beyond the mission of ICANN, and where the decision, as far as ICANN would see, was in fact entirely a rational decision. So, you know, a user needing to be able to respond because the decision made is actually going against a wider business interest.
Well, I think Peter talked about the last two mechanisms we're proposing for accountability. And in some ways you can see them as one being a political and one being a legal. So the first one's a political way of dealing with the thing you're discontented with. You can mobilize others and try to get the vote and get the ring reconsidered. Or if you're a particular individual entity or affected party, you could legally go and go to this independent review tribunal and say, I want this reviewed. We asked a series of international lawyers to help us work through what the heading should be for consideration of this sort of review, and they came back with this summation of what they saw in terms of what I will call administrative law, but which is called different things in different parts of the world. The question you're raising, let's go back a step. So let's say that ICANN would roughshod implement new GTLDs and do it in such a way that fundamentally damaged intellectual property rights. Okay. The last mechanism clearly allows it available for a company that's affected by that to take an action which says, "This was I'm an affected party, and this has been you haven't followed due process, and we haven't and you could actually make quite a good case about what the process is required." The consultation process is required, that it wasn't reasonable, that you've made a decision and you should have taken consideration that we were affected, and therefore, Martin, frankly, this whole reasonable test has been particularly developed by the British courts recently. And in the last 10 years, it's the British courts who particularly have worked through this concept of reasonableness in what sort of evidence is required before you can make a decision. I think that's a pretty broad bound. I mean, take that example. I'm company X, and you people have not listened to what we people are concerned about, and it would have only been reasonable in making a decision which affects us so much that you would have come and spoken to us. Therefore, please reconsider this. And that has been the case in a number of to use the British examples, but I've actually been reading this pretty carefully. There are examples of decisions in Britain along those lines. If it ends up, I think, with another party. The way you posed the question, it was like the full universe of humanity's experience with the full universe of humanity's possible problems, then I think that's a very difficult standard for us to try to identify every possible problem, except for the following. One of the reasons we have governments in the Government Advisory Committee to a degree, I think, would be the expectation that there was a group that was particularly concerned, that the expectation was they would raise it with their government, and that they try to bring it up through that process. So the boundary of the grounds under which you could make this appeal, if it comes to, we're still concerned, even though they don't think there's a boundary there. The opportunity then is to come and talk to their governments. I think if you found yourself in that specific case, what you also want to do is make certain they raise it with their government. It comes to other governments in the GAC. The present mechanism sort of implies you go and talk to the people in Washington. Well, I can
probably tell you a lot of people in Washington aren't terribly interested to hear about the problems of, you know, some small community in somewhere in the South Pacific. So I hope this is a mechanism to actually expands that sense of mechanisms to come up and raise questions.
Just add a very narrow point to that, and certainly there's no intention to exclude anyone. The intention, as it's built into the bylaws, is that it deals with affected parties. So if you are a party affected by the decision, then you should have a remedy. I think that's the principle, and if we haven't captured that accurately, thank you for alerting us. That necessarily leads to lawyers' discussions about how much standing you need, and I'm not sure yet that we've drilled down to that level of detail, but the principle is not, you know, if you're not a constituency or if you're not a registrant or if you're not running through our list of named entities and named organs, it's for parties affected by the decisions.
Thank you, Peter. We're going to take the question from Rolf, and then we're going to need to wrap this up. Rolf.
Well, maybe start at the end. Peter, this community would never do that. You know that. On the more serious note, I think most registries in this room take self-regulation very seriously, but they're not above the law. I'm not suggesting that there should be a single national or a international law that is over ICANN, but I think we have to realize there's no easy solution, and I think it's part of the problem also. As to the vote to ask the board to reconsider a decision, anybody can ask the board to reconsider. Is there a special influence on this vote and how the board treats the question to reconsider?
There is at the moment, and it's not very satisfactory, and I can take you through it later on if you like.
But I mean it's a special request. Well, it's hard to deny the request. They must reconsider.
I think the principle of the mechanism that's being put in place is that if it meets that requirement, they must reconsider.
But that can be, okay, we've reconsidered and we stick
yes,
to the decision.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct.
It can be, but it's not only that. They must reconsider, and the reconsideration must be in good faith, which, of course, has a legal meaning. And, yes, there could be opportunities. And we need to make this available where there might be a situation where the board, under appropriate fiduciary obligation, says, we've heard you, we understand this, but we still think the decision needs to be X, and they need to explain that. I would think that in the overwhelming number of cases, if this was ever used, it's such a strong political signal from the community that it's likely be taken incredibly seriously by the board, and that's its real intent. Its real intent is to be a focus point for ensuring that the board gets a very strong message about discontent in the community, and has formally got to respond to it.
So I might have misunderstood. You're talking about a decision of this external, effectively the tribunal, saying, board, you got this wrong.
No. I'm talking about the first one.
Because the same thing happens also, just to help your argument, the same thing is true of the decision of this court tribunal, Star Chamber. We haven't got a term for it yet. Its power is also... Starfish Chamber, thank you. Its power is also to tell the board you got that wrong, and it can only recommend. But what the proposal that Paul, the staff, have drafted is it's going to put that in the same category as advice from the GAC. It will be, the bylaws will say, this will be followed unless the board gives reasons in writing why it's not. So
okay,
again, there's accountability.
Okay, so, well, I think that then the first option where you need 2/3 of a vote to ask the board to reconsider sounds like a very heavy instrument with potentially very little impact. The second one, why are you not choosing for the possibility that this tribunal, or whatever you call it, revokes a decision by the board? And tells it, we will just not accept this decision, you will have to come up with a different one. We're not formulating it for you, but this one is a no-go.
Well, it's a number of things. The primary reason is that because we are a corporation, and this would be true anywhere in the Anglo-Saxon world where corporation law is, the final decision-making authority is with the board. Has to be with the board, and there cannot be any other authority over the board. So the ultimate accountability mechanism in ICANN is the board.
And that's where you normally have a court.
Well,
that's actually not... Yeah, sorry.
No, this proposal, of course, does not exclude national courts, and we, of course, operate under law. So the courts can enforce a decision
on a company.
I was going to come back to that. You mentioned, obviously, any issue of illegality is dealt with by national law, wherever the illegality occurs and whichever court has jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So that we're not talking about illegal matters or fraud by people. We're talking about decisions within the community affecting the community. Those decisions, the ultimate authority because of the corporate structure, is a board of directors. So that's why the selection and election of directors is so important. That's why directors take their job so seriously, because, and that's how they see themselves, as the trustees of the decision-making process in ICANN.
Peter, Rolf, we need to take this out. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but actually, whilst you're right that the ultimate authority is the board, there's nothing to prevent the board from agreeing to be bound by an outside, or inside even, but an outside direction. In the same way that a court can direct the board to do something, the board could, if it chose to, agree to be bound by the decision of the, whatever you want to call it, Star Chamber. They can agree to do that. But we need to take this out, because otherwise we're gonna be short of time. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the last CEO chair briefing from Paul. Can I ask you all to join me in thanking him? That is not an expression of joy at your leaving. Thank you all very much. It's coffee break time. Can we please convene back here on time at 11 o'clock? There's the microphone. For the IANA update from Kim. Thanks, everybody.